from WNYC Studios. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast. It's Wednesday, March 13th. So the House of Representatives just passed a bill to force TikTok's Chinese parent company called ByteDance to sell the platform. And if you've been in search of bipartisanship in America, here it is. It was 352-65 in the House. The measure would force the company to sell TikTok within 180 days or risk having the app barred from app stores and web hosting services in the United States. Now, the bill has to next go to the Senate, where it's probably going to face a tougher road. But both presidential candidates have weighed in on the matter as well. And weirdly, both seem to have changed their positions recently. On Friday, President Biden told reporters he would sign the measure into law if it passes the Senate. This after previously seeking alternative approaches to TikTok. And former President Trump, who actually did try to ban TikTok when he was in office, is now voicing opposition to the ban. So let's try to explain this now. We have Drew Harwell, technology reporter for The Washington Post. Drew, thanks for coming on this morning. Welcome to WNYC.
Yeah, thank you.
So tell us more about the bill itself. What did the House of Representatives just overwhelmingly pass?
Yeah, so this is a forced divestiture bill. It would basically force, like you said, ByteDance, which is based in Beijing, to sell TikTok within 180 days. If they don't do that, the government will start banning, it will start punishing Apple, Google, and tech companies and saying, you can't host TikTok on your app stores or your web hosting platforms. And TikTok would have basically no recourse. So, you know, the bill's proponents have said, we just want to get the Chinese influence out of this deal. We don't necessarily want to ban it. But the company and the bill's opponents have said, this is effectively a ban. You're telling us to sell this giant company within a couple months, or that will be, you know, eradicated from the entire country. So it's been a very, you know, a heated bill. Like you said, there's a big bipartisan effort to promote it. But there's also a really interesting kind of bipartisan resistance to it. You have very progressive liberals who are against this bill. You have very far right, hard right Republicans joining with them and joining with civil liberties groups like the ACLU, who are saying it's odd for the government, for a chamber of Congress like they did today, to promote such a government punishment of a speech platform.
Interesting. So if you get the most right-wing members of Congress and the most left-wing members of Congress aligned in kind of a joint minority, is it for different reasons? Like, we talk sometimes on this show about how both the right and the left at the edges are against U.S. military intervention in places, right? But the left is against it because they think the U.S. is getting over on the rest of the world. The right is against it because they think the rest of the world is getting over on us, making us do their defense. So is there something like that in this or not really?
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think the connective tissue, there's a few, you know, everybody kind of has their own personality quirks. But the big connective tissue is we feel like this is, you know, in America, our First Amendment right is that we can express ourselves using platforms like newspapers, radio stations, and social media apps. And so you've seen, you know, this kind of libertarian push from the right kind of join in a circular way with the, you know, very sort of free speech wing of the left, who's saying, you know, the proper relationship between government and citizens in the U.S. is the citizen decides what they want to be exposed to, what ideologies to embrace, and the government butts out of it. And so, you know, some on both sides, on both the right and the left, they have said, you know, we don't like that China bans apps in that country. We think that's pretty bad. We don't want to confront the grave challenge of China by becoming more like it. So I think, you know, like you said, it's such an odd battle here in Washington. It's so rare to see these kinds of battle lines be drawn where, you know, Trump is joining with the ACLU and Biden is joining with, you know, Republicans in Congress. And yet, you know, these issues really go to the core of what, how we feel about the Bill of Rights and the Constitution and our feelings about social media and China's growth on the global stage.
Yeah. Can you name any names easily enough, by the way, in this relatively small coalition that opposed the bill? Is it like AOC and Jamal Bowman on the one side and Marjorie Taylor Greene and Matt Gaetz combining forces, or do you know any names?
Yes, that's right. I mean, Marjorie Taylor Greene came out and had a kind of funny, you know, in her own way, speech on the floor today where she said, you know, I was banned from Twitter, which she always loves to remind people of that. Uh-huh. I was banned from Twitter, and Twitter is an American company. And now the government is trying to do it on a big stage. Isn't this a slippery slope? So she is joining with, like you said, people like AOC and Jamal Bowman who have said, this is a speech platform. A lot of young Americans use it. We don't want to be taking it away. Rand Paul is, you know, on the Senate level, he has basically said he's going to block this if the bill ever reaches the Senate, and says, you know, I'm for the Constitution. I'm not for the government stomping on a business. And so, yeah, they're all kind of on the same side of this.
Very odd. What's the central concern by the 352 members of the House who voted for the bill? Is it that China controls apps in their country and, you know, censors the media in that respect? Or is it that somehow when we do things on TikTok, China is getting our data in a way that they might use against us as individuals or against the United States?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. It all goes to suspicion of China. And the two prongs of their concern is, one, like you said, the data mining. When we use TikTok or any social app, you know, it gets data on a little bit of who we are. It's, you know, the videos we're sharing, that data is stored by TikTok. TikTok's owner, ByteDance, is based in Beijing. So there's the fear that, you know, and China over the last decade has ramped up cyber attacks on the U.S. They've been, you know, gathering personal data for what the federal government says is, you know, espionage and blackmail purposes. Could China use TikTok as a vessel to acquire, you know, data on diplomats, military officials in the U.S. and use that against them? That's part of it. The other part of it is the algorithm. You know, when you use TikTok, it shows you videos it thinks you want to see, and you swipe past them if you don't want to watch them, or you watch them. And so the algorithm is very important. It's what recommends for you to watch. And so the fear is that, well, we see how China works domestically. China has a great firewall. They block a lot of what people can see. Living in China, it's very hard to learn about real historical events like Tiananmen Square and the Uyghurs and all of these, you know, horrors of the Chinese Communist Party. And so they feel like, well, what's to stop China from manipulating the algorithm in a way that Americans feel worse about their own country or don't learn, you know, the reality of China? And so there's both of those parts are often brought up, and they're both sort of based in, again, just a fear of China and how they could manipulate TikTok to their own ends.
And I've read some reporting that indicates, and tell me if you can confirm this, that China is actually doing that already, that algorithms are feeding us things that do sort of drag the United States, but they won't feed us things that will point out China's alleged genocide against the Uyghurs, you know, as you point out, and things, other things that are bad about the Chinese government. Whereas if we're on some other social media platform and we have the same inputs, the algorithm sees us for who we are, it would give us those things about the U.S. and China more equally. Is that a confirmed fact?
It's not confirmed. It's actually, you know, that is the big question mark. If you go on TikTok right now, you can search Uyghurs or Tiananmen Square and see truthful videos right now. I mean, in other words, you could go on to TikTok in the U.S. and see a whole bunch of videos that China would probably rather you not see. Now, when it comes to the algorithm, because it's just, you know, because we're just seeing the output of it, it's kind of hard to say, well, would I be seeing more videos about Tiananmen Square if there wasn't some secret influence behind the scenes? And so, you know, from the federal government side, they have said, we really worry that this could happen down the road. Who knows what will happen in future elections? But the evidence for that happening right now is not clear. We don't have evidence of China meddling in the algorithm. And TikTok, for their part, says China doesn't meddle, that they don't have any government influencing the algorithm. Some of these fears came to a head after October 7th, when people were seeing a whole lot of pro-Palestinian videos on TikTok. They felt like they were seeing a lot fewer pro-Israel videos on TikTok. And there were fears that, well, couldn't China just be behind the scenes trying to steer the American populace to feel some way about this conflict in a way that would be geopolitically beneficial to China? But I think the reality check on that is that the other platforms, including very American platforms like Meta, which owns Facebook and Instagram, you see a lot more pro-Palestinian videos on those as well. And so what is, you know, when we go to these platforms, whether we agree or disagree with the content, are we seeing those because that's a reflection of what people are posting, what people right. are choosing to engage with, or because there's some shadowy, you know, manipulator
Chinese
behind
influence.
The scenes?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Certainly one could guess on the pro-Palestinian video dominance that TikTok, because it's used so predominantly by younger people, that's who feels strongly about that. That's who's in the protest movement. But that's just a theory that may or may not be true. But that's one plausible explanation. Drew Harwell, technology reporter from The Washington Post. As if you're just tuning in, the House of Representatives just overwhelmingly passed that bill to force that divestment. Otherwise, it would be banned in the United States if the Senate goes along and the president goes along. Here's a clip of Nancy Pelosi, who voted for the bill, saying that it's not a ban.
This is not a ban on TikTok. I'm a grandmother of teenagers. I understand the entertainment value, the educational value, the communication value, the business value for some business on this. This is not an attempt to ban TikTok. It's an attempt to make TikTok better. Tic-tac-toe, a winner.
TikTok, tic-tac-toe. If Joe Biden said that, they would say he was having a senior moment. And here's a 45-second clip of New Jersey Democrat Frank Pallone on the national security risk. He voted for the bill, too.
Big tech has transformed social media platforms into modern-day media companies. And unfortunately, these networks engage in invasive surveillance practices by collecting Americans' most sensitive personal data. Foreign adversaries also see access to Americans' data, communication networks, devices, and applications as the entry points to disrupt our daily lives and conduct espionage activities. And all of this endangers our national security interests. We have a long history of restricting our TV and radio airwaves from ownership by foreign governments and individuals due to the national security concerns that these arrangements pose. Social media companies should also face similar scrutiny.
Neil in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hi, Neil.
Hi, how are you?
Okay. So
a few weeks back, there were tens of millions of views of videos in support of Osama bin Laden. I think it was a really good example of how TikTok has been pushing radical ideas more than any other platform. It seems to be indoctrinating people in a way that Twitter or Instagram has not. And it's also clear that the algorithms for TikTok users are calibrated differently from the U.S. versus Chinese users. So I guess the question here is, why isn't the discussion about how much of a national security threat TikTok is? Pushing violent radical views.
Neil, thank you very much. Well, that is a lot of the conversation. So Drew Harwell, Washington Post technology reporter, that Osama bin Laden video did make the news. And, you know, he's been dead for over a decade, but suddenly there's this Osama bin Laden video that went viral on TikTok. Is it maliciously distributed by the Chinese government in a way that would, flood our own TikTok algorithms if we're on TikTok differently than any other social media platform? Is this an allegation? Is it proven? What's the larger context of that Osama bin Laden video?
Yeah, that was the theory. So this happened back in November. Some videos of, you know, basically saying that bin Laden's letter to America, in which, you know, he justifies killing people in 9/11, that they were saying, oh, this makes some great points. They were really disturbing videos, certainly, from people who were a little ignorant about the reality of it. The people who shared those videos on TikTok had very few followers, and the videos were actually really not seen all that much on TikTok. I know because I did a story on some of this. It didn't really become a headline-grabbing event until a couple people started taking those videos and putting them into Twitter compilations and then sharing those. That's when they really hit virality. And so you can actually see in the TikTok data where, you know, the hashtags that had videos about the bin Laden letter to America had, you know, a couple hundred views on TikTok. They had, I mean, a couple hundred videos. There were like a million views. But they really didn't gain that viral spread until they were posted onto X, which was Twitter.
Interesting.
But, you know, this was an interesting instance because, of course, it really depended, you know, your view on this matter was very dependent on how you felt about TikTok to begin with. People who didn't like TikTok and felt it was a threat saw this is China at the wheel, steering us into this anti-imperialist view and manipulating all the minds of all these young, impressionable TikTok users. Whereas people who were, you know, more supportive of TikTok said, this is a speech platform and people say things we disagree with. You know, anybody can pick up their phone and say things into a video. Is something that is posted on a couple hundred videos on TikTok, is that really, one, does that merit banning the whole platform to begin with? And so, you know, and free speech can be a yucky affair, right? There are plenty of websites with things we disagree with, but we don't say we should ban all websites. And so it just became, you know, like October 7th in the Israel Gaza videos, it became this big geopolitical mess that had some conspiracy theories involved and had some sort of, you know, suspicions around TikTok that were really based on your prior views.
One more call as we get to our last topic on this, and that is the presidential campaign context, where apparently Biden, who was for TikTok, is now against it, and Trump, who was against TikTok, is now for it. What? But Roger in the West Village is going to talk about that. Roger, you're on WNYC. Hello.
All right. Thank you, Brian. I saw on MSNBC, I believe, reportedly that, as usual, Trump changed his view because a head executive at TikTok either made a contribution to the RNC or made a set up a fundraiser for Trump so that he can look for ways to obtain a reimbursement of his legal fees.
Roger, thank you. Fact check that, Drew. Is that the case? Give us the Biden and the Trump story before you go.
Yeah. So the Biden story is that he's kind of been questionable of TikTok for a long time, except that his re-election campaign joined a couple months ago, and the White House has welcomed TikTok influencers. They've briefed them on the Gaza war. They see it as a valuable tool in the coming election. So Biden's been a little bit all over the map. He has said he would sign the TikTok for sale bill if it gets to him, but it may not in the Senate. Now with Trump, it's interesting. He kicked off a lot of this fur around TikTok back when he was president. He pushed to force a sale or to ban it. He was rejected by federal judges who say, sorry, government, you need more proof than this to step on people's free speech rights. But then he basically dropped it. And I actually talked to a Trump aide a couple years ago who said, you know, Trump, he never really cared all that much about TikTok. He saw it as red meat for China hawks who supported him. He was upset. You may remember at the time there was this Tulsa rally that a bunch of TikTokers basically trolled him by signing up for seats and then not going. And kind of it was an embarrassment. But he also saw the poll numbers at the time that said, if you ban TikTok, there are going to be a lot of young people and suburban moms who are going to hate your guts and not vote for you. And Trump, who, you know, is very self-interested, as many politicians are, said, I'm going to drop it. So, you know, in the last couple of days, when, you know, last week when he said on Truth Social that banning TikTok would basically be a big gift to Facebook, who he hates even more, people saw, wow, this is a big reversal, and they connected the dots to there's a big ByteDance investor named Jeff Yass, who runs the Club for Growth, very libertarian, Tea Party donor on the right. He had met with Trump recently. There's been some talks of funding. So they saw, okay, this is clearly a pay for play. He's changed Trump's mind. But I actually think the reversal is not as sudden as we may see. I think maybe the Yass connection is clear. And as also should be said, Kellyanne Conway of the Trump team is also now lobbying for ByteDance in D.C. It's such an interesting battle line here. But, you know, I think Trump doesn't like Meta. He feels like Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg are out to get him. They stole the election from him. It's baseless, of course, but this is what he believes. And he feels like the enemy of his enemy is his friend. And so he feels like banning TikTok. So, you know, Trump is not, but again, Trump is not alone on the right in saying this bill goes too far. And so it's interesting to see Trump sort of come out like that. And you know, it'll be curious whether he sticks to his guns. This is a guy who's not exactly known for commitment to principle. Is he going to stay, you know, defending TikTok if this matter goes to the other side of Congress, or is he just going to sort of move on?
Right. By the way, I saw that on the Today Show this morning, they said Kellyanne Conway told Trump that, you know, you're popular on TikTok now. And maybe that had something to do with it, just as he was popular on Twitter in the past. All right, there's the breaking news for folks. Folks, Congress has, or the House of Representatives, I should say, has overwhelmingly passed this bill that would ban TikTok this morning in the United States if the Chinese parent company ByteDance doesn't divest. It's got uncertain prospects in the Senate, however, and Trump and Biden are both all over the place on this. And we thank Drew Harwell, technology reporter for The Washington Post, for jumping right on it. Drew, thanks.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.